So it's batch number 4 of local news and features, and we're in our final section with Kath and Uta. We've got myself and Les coming up shortly. So we have 4 more stories for you, and Kath's going to do the headlines first.
NHS hero Tanya struck down with rare cancer after going to Royal Stoke with a lump. Staffordshire family ripped apart after brothers died at 29.
And Uta's headlines are?
Call to build houses in Longton and not in leafy Lightwood, because Longton has semi-derelict slums. And neighbour demands a car park after Aspire Housing sold off garages.
Okay, so over to Kath, who's going to do the first story for us in batch 4.
Okay, NHS hero Tanya struck down with rare cancer after going to Royal Stoke with a lump. An NHS hero is now fighting her own health battle after being struck down with a rare cancer. Tanya Sanderson was diagnosed with pleomorphic liposarcoma in April. The mental health nurse's ordeal began when she noticed a small lump on the back of her left thigh in 2023. Mum of two, Tanya initially thought it was nothing to worry about until her leg began to hurt in January. A visit to the Royal Stoke University Hospital and a follow-up appointment at the Royal Orthopaedic Hospital in Birmingham soon confirmed the worst. Now she is warning others to be vigilant of the symptoms. The 41-year-old of Trentham said, "Honestly, I thought the lump was just some kind of muscle. I just assumed I'd done too much in the gym, or that maybe it was from riding the clutch in my car. I kept joking about it for ages, asking people to touch it. But after about 18 months, it started to hurt. It felt like I had a bit of sciatica or something. My legs started to go numb. Then I noticed I was feeling physically unwell. I was having brain fog and extreme fatigue, and the lump was getting bigger. Eventually, I went to get it seen in February. They scheduled me to have an MRI. That's when I found out I had this extremely rare cancer. They say that most GPs will only come across one across their entire career." Tanya says the horrific revelation filled her with dread. She explained, "I was shocked when I found out. I really didn't think it was cancer. It was even more shocking when they explained it to me. My cancer normally affects older men. So because I'm a younger woman who's always kept fit and healthy, never drank or smoked, it just boggled my mind. I was terrified at first. Because the lump had been there for so long, I assumed the worst. With cancer, you have much better chances if you catch it early, and I have the most aggressive liposarcoma there is. But fortunately, my CT scan results showed it hadn't spread anywhere. I thought it was too late." Tanya has had radiotherapy at the Royal Stoke with surgery scheduled for later in the year. Tanya added, "I'm worried they might have to amputate my leg if they can't remove all of the tumour because of how it has grown. It could be the only option. I know that it has gone beyond my knee, where it's touching the nerves and the blood vessels, but apart from that, I'm feeling positive. I'm going to need lots of physiotherapy after it's done. They'll have to take a big chunk of my leg muscle out. I'll probably be left on crutches for a long time. I'm prepared for it, though. I've gone past being scared and crying. I'm looking forward to getting this out of the way. Right now, I can't do a lot of the things I enjoy doing. I love swimming, I love body pump, and I love going on walks with my family. But at the moment, I keep falling over and losing feeling in my leg. So those parts of my life are on hold." Friend Caroline Jones, a former NHS colleague, has kick-started a fundraiser to help Tanya make a more comfortable recovery. Caroline added, she is a very private person and she doesn't like to share these things, but someone blurted out that she was on an oncology appointment. I reached out and asked her what was going on. Because I've been through cancer myself, I know how it feels. I know the stress of facing the condition as a single parent, trying to keep everything together. That's why I decided to start the fundraiser, get a bit together that can provide her with some peace of mind for a few months while she just focuses on her recovery. Hopefully, we can get her a mobility car too.
Okay, over to Ita now for her next story in Batch 4.
There's a call to build houses in semi-derelict slum Longton and not in leafy Lightwood. Residents say it will be a dereliction of duty to earmark greenbelt land for thousands of homes. Stoke-on-Trent City Council has controversially allocated up to 3,000 homes to the greenbelt land at Lightwood in its draft local plan. Scores of residents attended a public meeting organised by Lightwood Community Group to discuss the local plan and organise objections to it. The Labour-run City Council is currently carrying out a public consultation on the plan, which, once it is adopted, will guide all development in Stoke-on-Trent up to 2040. Stoke-on-Trent has been set a house building target of 948 homes a year by the government, but council leaders insist that residents' feedback will be taken into account. David Evans, chair of the community group, told the meeting that there are a number of arguments against developing the 116-hectare site, which lies between Cocknage Road, Lightwood Road and Wood Park Lane. These include the presence of a mineral safeguard area due to the presence of Etruria marl under the land and the fact that it lies within the Green Belt. Mr. Evans said, "National policy is clear. Greenbelt land should only be released in exceptional circumstances. We don't believe any such circumstances exist. There's sufficient brownfield land, greyfield land and greenfield land before you should even consider putting a single house in the greenbelt. That's the stance we've taken as a community group. The land is also in a mineral safeguarded area. I've been told that it's the best site in the UK for Etruria marl, probably the best site in Europe. We didn't know the local plan would include Lightwood a month or so back, but it is. Now it's about what we do as a community to suggest to the council that this land should not be included in the local plan. Personally, I feel that it's a dereliction of duty by the council to include this land, particularly when there are brownfield sites in the city which are not included. You have to ask why." Mr. Evans said there are also concerns over the local road network, flooding and school places. He urged residents to take part in the consultation and send letters to the council to make it clear how the community felt on this issue. The meeting was attended by Conservative City Councillor Faisal Hussein, Sadaqat Maksum and City Independent Councillor Lillian Dodd, as well as Alison Gardner, the Labour MP for Stoke-on-Trent South. Councillor Hussein, whose Mere South ward includes the Green Belt land, said, "This is not surplus land. It provides essential benefits, supports biodiversity, contributes to climate resilience and safeguards the health and well-being of residents. Once it's gone, it's gone. I would urge all residents to say no to the local plan." Councillor Maksoon said, "We do not want compromises. We do not want half measures. We will not accept any plan that includes the destruction of our green belt." He challenged Dr. Gardner to take an equally firm stance and demand that the council remove the Lightwood land from the local plan. Dr. Gardner insisted that she would support the residents in their campaign, but said that she preferred to take a pragmatic approach. She said, "I would say yes and make you all like me, but my mind is on what will get you in, well, will get you the wins and get you what you want. I've said I will support you to fight this." Dr. Gardner told the meeting that she felt that the infrastructure argument against development at Lightwood offered the best chance of success due to changes in national policy weakening greenbelt protections. She said, "My focus is on making sure your objections are strong enough to really stand up. I do worry this new definition of grey belt creates a grey area, and I'm not sure this will strengthen your argument." Local resident Phil Calcott was among those who attended the meeting. He believes that the council should be looking to redevelop vacant and underused land in and around town centres instead of the green belt. He said, "Tam's factory in Longton is closed in 2006. Woolworth closed in 2008. Longton is a semi-derelict slum. There's a heck of a lot of useless land. Why isn't the council clearing it? Alex Sandiford, councillor for the neighbouring Fulford ward in Stafford Borough, also attended the meeting to support the residents' campaign, and he said, "I'm completely against all forms of development in the Greenbelt. The Greenbelt is there to prevent urban sprawl. It's there as a buffer zone between Rough Close and the wider Stoke area. All this grey belt talk is really unhelpful. The public consultation runs until October 20. To have your say, so you can't unfortunately do that anymore, but it was on visitstoke.gov.uk/localplan.
Many thanks for that. Over to Kath now for her final story in batch four.
Staffordshire family ripped apart after brothers died at 29. Two resilient parents are set to reach an amazing charitable milestone after losing two of their children to undiagnosed heart problems. Jane and Paul Phillips are set to complete their 1,000th heart screening. The family of five had enjoyed a normal life until eldest son Christopher, 29, passed away suddenly in 2006. 5 years later, their youngest son Stephen, also 29, died in his sleep. Now Christopher's twin brother Craig is the only surviving sibling in the family who lives at Weston near Stafford. Jane, aged 66, told Stoke-on-Trent Live, "Christopher's loss was so unexpected. He was enjoying young life with his wife in Oslo, Norway. Then he just suddenly collapsed one day. We never saw it coming. After Christopher passed away, all of us had heart screenings to try and make sure nothing like that would ever happen to us again. The tests are around 80% effective, so they usually pick up any glaring problems pretty easily. Nothing came back, so we thought we were okay. But a few years later, Stephen passed away suddenly too. One day, he just didn't come into work. He wasn't replying to any of their messages or calls either. It was very unlike him, so his manager raised the alarm and he was found dead in his bedroom. He'd had a fatal cardiac arrest in his sleep. He was just 29 too. We still don't know what caused their heart attacks. Christopher had a slight problem with his left ventricle, but nothing that would have caused this. Stephen appeared to have nothing wrong with him at all." Mum Jane said that losing two out of her three sons has been horrific. "Losing Christopher was just unbelievable," she explained. "As a mother, you never expect to get that phone call to say that your son has passed away, especially when, as far as you're aware, they are perfectly healthy. Once was bad enough. And then we had to relive all the horror again when Stephen passed away too. It was truly devastating. I still can't believe we lost two of our children from that same issue. I'm just grateful that Craig is still here. He gives us a reason to carry on. It makes you remember that you have someone else to live for and that you just can't give up." Parents Jane and Paul became involved with the Cardiac Risk in the Young Cry charity back in 2016. They have since completed hundreds of heart screenings in an effort to save other families from their never-ending heartache. "We do around 100 screenings at the Weston Village Hall every year. This year we've had a lot of requests from Weston Road High School because a day after I sent details around about the upcoming screenings, a child there had a cardiac arrest at the school sports day. He's doing okay now, thankfully. We also do work to look after our older community members too. Once a year we do health checks for people aged over 35. We do heart screenings, blood pressure checks and check blood sugar levels. Since our screenings began, around 82 people have been given a medical referral. We don't get lots of feedback on individual cases because of confidentiality, but I know there have been cases where it has saved lives." Although the Phillips family are set to complete their 1,000th screening, the Driven duo are determined to continue their screening efforts for as long as possible. Jane added, "When we first started, it cost around £3,500 a day to fundraise for the screenings. Now it costs around £7,000 a day. Raising that each year is difficult, but as long as we can do it, we will keep pushing. We're going to keep going for as long as we can."
Wonderful stuff. So over to Uta now, who's going to do the final story for us in batch number four.
Here's the demand for a car park. Neighbours are calling for a car park in their street after Aspire Housing sold off 8 garages. They live on Farmers Bank in Silverdale and say the garages are now set to be demolished and replaced with 2 homes. It followed the rejection of plans to build 3 houses on the site. The planning application, which attracted 2 objections on parking grounds, was approved in 2024. Neighbours say 13 properties are affected by the lack of parking spaces. David Lowe rented one of the garages for 10 years and has lived in the street for more than 30 years. He said, "Our problem is emergency access. Unfortunately, we needed an ambulance this year and it took 20 minutes for them to park up. That's without this building being done. Our argument is they haven't offered us alternative parking and we're asking if this green can be turned into parking for residents." Neighbour Yvonne Brown added, "Other streets around here are full as well. The green doesn't get used, not even the children play on it. So I don't see an objection as to why we can't get it turned into parking. We need it at the end of the day. I don't personally have an objection to those garages going on and housing being put there, but it's the problem with parking because that's going to be awful." It was back in 2023 that Aspire Housing drew up plans to sell 37 garages across Newcastle Borough to raise £140,000. The Farmers Bank garages were valued at £30,000. Mark Warburton, Aspire Housing, Head of Assets and Sustainability, said the garage site on Farmers Bank was sold in 2023, so any recent planning applications are not associated with Aspire Housing. We do retain ownership of the green space near this site and currently have no plans to make changes to this space.
Wonderful stuff. Many thanks to Kath and Uta for the last 4 batches. Keep listening. We'll have some more news stories from myself and Liz coming up. But up next, we have Uta's one and only snippets. Don't go away.